This last presentation today,
it's a real treat. I'm notorious for wanting to know how stuff works. Alright? I'm notorious for wanting to know how stuff works. And what I mean by that, it goes all the way back to the beginning of my career. The 30-second story is in 1996, we had a Cisco 7000 that failed. And all of our point-of-sale systems, all of our management systems ran through it. And I found out two things that day. First thing I found out was same-day delivery. I didn't know you could get parts from around the country to a location same day. I had to drive to the airport and pick up a part because we were losing so much money with the big gap. Second thing, while it was broken, I think somebody asked, Eddie asked, when do you learn more? When things are broken. Well, the 7000 was broken that day, and I couldn't bring it anywhere that was already broken. So I just took the back cover off and started looking around. Anyone would have guessed what I saw lots of?
Dust.
Air. A lot of dust, but I saw more air than I saw this. Now, well, I guess it's kind of, you get the point. There was a lot of nothing. But I did see a processor. I saw storage. I saw interfaces. And I saw random access memory. And all the magic went away. From that point until this day, there are no black boxes for me in the internet networking closet. And what I love about this next presentation, well, I'm just gonna let Jason talk about it. I love stuff that's open. And I'm at a point now in my career, until you talk open, you're not serious about security. Till you know what processors is running, what operating system is running on top of it, until you know that to that level, I question if you're really serious about security in your network and with your systems and services. And with that, Jason, we're gonna hand it off to you.
All right, thank you. All right, so Jason Mackey, RockNet Supply. So I came onto RockNet for the primary reason of supporting their open networking initiatives. So first off, before I get into any of this, open networking, how many people are familiar with what open networking is? Okay, so there's a lot of acronyms. Feel free to ask, stop me, ask me questions. I'm totally fine with that. There's also a lot of brands and things like that in this. The point for me is education, to get people familiar with what this ecosystem looks like, because it is deep and it's wide. There's a lot of things going on in it. And so this is like super high level. Here's what the players are, here's what they do. And on top of that, I will try not to take an hour so that I keep people from getting to lunch. So with that, I'm gonna get going. So I came out of a service provider as an engineer. I deployed a lot of your, if you wanna call it the tier one network platforms. Still love them, they work awesome. They all follow the same standards that we were talking about earlier. You got to follow the standards so they interoperate. So open networking, real quick, what is open networking? It provides network flexibility. So when I say that, it's you don't have to, if you've got a box that's got this one function in your network and you're used to using that one model and it's on backorder for a year, that's a problem. So in the open networking space, it gives you more flexibility in both your software and your hardware and what's available. So one thing that I'd like to nail down right away, open networking is not equal to open source. We're not talking about grabbing a server and putting Linux on it and running it. You can, it doesn't mean it's equal to it, but it is still part of it. It's part of the ecosystem. It isn't just defining what it is. So open networking at a really high level, if you look through these logos that are on this presentation, Open Networking Foundation and the Telecom Infra Project, there's a lot of overlap in here. Some of these brands are new to people, but there's some really common ones in there, including a lot of, I like to call them the tier one, or if I want to get a little more cheeky with it, the legacy hardware providers that are out there. Anyways, they're all involved in this because they know where it's going, including standards groups. I came out of a cable operator, so real familiar with Cable Labs as an example, very active in this space. So what we're developing is a full ecosystem on how to build networking that is more open in the space, and we'll get to that. So basically, if you look at the network stack, how network hardware is built, you've got the same thing going on, no matter who's making it, whether or not you're virtualizing it on a server, or whether it's a physical router that has chipsets in it that are specialized ASICs, it's all the same thing. So if you think about it, I'll start from the bottom up. Media, that's your cable, right, going into the router. Data plane is where you're doing the forwarding. This is where those chipsets are. So very commonly in this space, you got something from, say it's NVIDIA in the AI space, or if it's Broadcom in networking space, that's where that's happening. And then you got these other layers that go up higher, the hardware abstraction. Basically, most of these boxes now are running a Linux kernel. You program the Linux kernel, it programs the Broadcom or the Marvell or whoever the heck it is underneath it. And then you got your control plane and software abstraction. Think of that as you logging into the console and the operating system that you're programming. So it's the same stack across the industry for all these platforms. It's just how they approach them, how open they are, whether or not you have access to those, and how they apply to the boxes. When I say boxes, I'm talking hardware. So in open networking, to make it really, really super overly simple, you can choose how you build your network. So you can choose hardware. That doesn't mean you're choosing one piece of software. You can have software choices with that hardware. And then you have more flexibility in how you get support for that. Is it self-supported? Are you contracting with another company to get that support for you? Is it the company making the software? Maybe, or the hardware? Could be. But you're not tied to the one business model that that company offers. And to, like I said earlier, I operated a network that was with the tier one style hardware vendors before. Loved them. There's absolutely nothing wrong with it. I have nothing against them. This is just a different way to do business. So one of the things out there that a lot of people, when they start digging into this, if you search for open networking out on the internet or use ChatGPT to try to narrow this down for you, there's a lot of different rabbit holes you can go down. So I'd just like to throw out that there are solutions. It's route switch, it's Wi-Fi, broadband network gateways. I got multiple ways to build those. Carrier grade net, whatever it is. There's a lot of different spaces that this operates in that would be traditional to both the service provider and the data center. So you can't get into all of these things in enough time to still get to lunch. So feel free to track me down later. So why people look at open networking? The network flip. Why open networking is supply chain resiliency is a huge one, especially if you go back a few years. You have the whole COVID thing. Routers all of a sudden took a year to get or more. And so supply chain resiliency is big. Competition is a big thing. If you've got one guy making the router, they get to tell you what the price is, right? But if you've got two or three guys making that same hardware, now they got to think about what other people are pricing those at. So that helps. And then the other thing that I love about this is the specialization. So you can buy hardware that has a very, very specific purpose that was purpose-built for one reason. And when they saw that reason and built that purpose-built hardware, it tends to make that box less expensive because they're doing more volume for that specific purpose. So there's a few ways to look at that from a hardware perspective, but that specialization piece I think is helpful, especially when you get into like cell site routers, things of that nature. Again, coming from the service provider, that's my angle. So how many here are familiar with any of these brands? EdgeCore, Eufy Space, and Celestica. Okay, so thanks, Bob. Yeah, so we've got a few people in here that are. The way I like to explain these brands, because a lot of people go, Eufy Space, what the heck is that? If you look at where these came from, I think of these as a house brand. It's like going to Costco and buying Kirkland, right? So if you're going after EdgeCore for the hardware, that's actually built by Acton. If you crack open routers and switches around the anywhere in the networking space, there's a chance that some of those platforms are built by Acton, or at least some of the boards or power supplies or something is built by the humongous hardware manufacturer. Foxconn, the house brand is Eufy Space. There's a slightly different relationship there and ownership, but Eufy Space is all built by Foxconn. Again, you crack open a router or switch, pretty likely going to find some Foxconn labels in there. And then Celestica, they did us the favor of when they went direct market, and that they build a lot of hardware out there for the other companies too, but they did us the favor of keeping their same name, which I definitely appreciated. I didn't have to remember yet another brand. There's others out there, no offense to them. These are the ones that I'm familiar with, that I work with mostly, because especially the top two, they play with the Broadcom silicon that I like. But so why open networking? VNX, StrataXGS, why are we focused on those platforms in open networking? So I grabbed this directly off of Broadcom's website. So Broadcom makes lots of different chipsets, and they have different functions. Just because it says Broadcom doesn't mean it's going to do the thing that you want it to do. So there's a delineation in their product line, and that depends on whether or not you're putting in a box because you want a service provider routed network, you want to do MPLS, you want to do segment routing, IPv6, anything like that, carrier grade NAT on the box. You have to have the right chipset, and that's that DNX family. They bought that from a different company, but that's what they name it now is DNX. So if you're going out and buying a platform that is Broadcom based, this will be your Jericho chipsets and your Qumran chipsets for those that are familiar. And then the StrataXGS, that's your data center silicon. So you'll see brands like Trident or product lines that are chipsets that are like Trident, and there's some others as well. But the way that, if you look at that architecture, it covers the span of a service provider network. I've got some more that go into the data center too. So it's not a niche market thing. They have a lot of products that go across the portfolio of what the network operators need. Okay, so if you lean into the software takes longer to talk about because the hardware, you got a box, it's got Broadcom in it, it's got a typically Intel, but not always, chipset with some RAM, and it does the thing. And then the software really is what defines what the box is doing for you. So I'm gonna dig a little more into each of these. There's more players that are out there again, no offense intended, but this is what we commonly see in the service provider space, people deploying. And there's some that have some really big differentiators, some are very purpose-driven. So I'm gonna go into this. This is not a marketing deck, but it'll raise awareness as to where these different providers of software fit. So I real quick grabbed this chart, Gigaom. If you look at this chart, I've got this. Wow, look at that. So if you look in here, there's some of the brands that are in here. We've got Xware, we got some of them that I've got listed, but if you go over here, here's our friends at Arista. They're in there, they're actually positioned very well in the maturity area, that's awesome. Cisco's a little below them, isn't that funny? But Juniper's in here, so this isn't focused on open networking. This is a chart for all network operating systems, and that's because the industry is starting to adopt open networking pretty widely. So IP Infusion, that was the first one on the list. So if you look at adoption in the industry, 2.4 million ports, 50,000 licenses, and this is as of 24. So if you forward, they've made a lot of progress in that space. But if you look at that service provider, I know it's a kind of an eye chart, not small, but there's some really large operators in here that are using this. That doesn't mean their entire network is running it, but they had a purpose or a function in the network that they wanted to try. That's commonly what we'll see. Somebody will start with an aggregation router or a peering router, and then they'll slowly expand into it if they like the technology, which I can talk more offline, don't want to get into those details. But what's really interesting about this is companies like this didn't start by writing operating systems for the small service providers. They started writing operating systems for the other network technology companies, their source code. And they would sell that source code into those companies. So if you look at the OEMs list, there's a couple that you're probably running in your networks if you're running networks, and they would write source code for them. So that's how they got the experience. So when you're looking at this code, this isn't a dude in his closet thinking, hey, I'm gonna figure out how to run BGP today on a router. These are people that are actually doing this commercially, and then they put together their own operating systems. And I like to throw for those that do service provider for cell backhaul. You can kind of see who gets the PTSD when they start thinking about Metro Ethernet Forum certifications and having to do all of that. These guys have gone through that. So the second one, DriveNets, this is the big company a lot of people haven't heard of. And they're getting their name out there a little bit more, but I didn't do it. Somebody really doesn't like DriveNets. Okay.
Good job, you got our attention.
And we're awake again. But I love this quote. And the reason I like this quote is people haven't really heard of this operating system, but if you look at this, it's a small company you might have heard of, AT&T. If you look at this, they're carrying 80% of their 840 petabytes of traffic in their core is running on DriveNet. So it's a well-adopted technology, but they went after all the tier ones. They didn't go and say, you know, I'm going to try to find some tier three, tier four and just play with this. They said, let's go after the gorillas that are out there, and then we'll scale back a little bit and go after the smaller providers later. But, you know, so Comcast, Telefonica, Orange, these are the companies that are actively deploying the DriveNets. Most of the hardware they run is Foxconn built, the Eufy Space platform. What I love about them is how they scale their network. So if you look at that little chart, or the little diagram in the right corner there, it looks a lot like a data center fabric because that's how they built their routers. So this is full service provider core router. It scales up extremely well. Like this one's saying, it's up to
921 terabits.
There you go. 921 terabits that it'll scale to. So it'll scale down a lot farther than that, but one of the common boxes that I love about that they use for this is a 36 by 400 gig box that takes up 3U. So think about the scalability of that, the flexibility when you don't have to put in a big chassis to get all of those interfaces. You simply add more boxes. Makes it capable of scaling out, not just having to do forklift replacements of the routers. So fully capable for service provider protocols, otherwise they wouldn't be running in these environments. So the other thing that DriveNets does they have successful deployments in already, so it's not like a pipe dream, is GPU, front end and back end and storage. What I love about this is the fact that when they ran against industry standard benchmark testing at the bottom, traditional Ethernet, 72% better performance than traditional Ethernet, 15% better performance than Spectrum X, but what I love throwing out there is 6% better than InfiniBand. Now, if you do anything in GPU networking, this is what, especially NVIDIA, owns them, and sells them, they actually have better benchmark testing than that. That's something to be said, because NVIDIA is the industry standard. There's a lot of people saying if you're going to do GPU networking for that fabric on the back end, you need to be running InfiniBand. Well, you can come talk to me later. So, or Bob. And so, moving on, Exaware. Exaware is a little bit more niche play. They do have some decent size customers that are out there. Again, people aren't just running one of these platforms. I don't know anybody here that only buys hardware from one vendor, right? You've got different things that do different functions in the network. Some do better than others. So Exaware runs in multiple of these other providers. They're smaller scale, but they do an extremely good job at aggregation. And they also have some unique capabilities of being able to run containers on Broadcom-based switches if you had certain network functions. So that's kind of a fun little niche play that they have. They've been around for quite a while, again, writing code for other companies, and then put that code together to be able to deploy. They lean more on the edge core side of the house. They do some Eufy Space support, but they're more the hardware that they support would be on the edge core side. So that's one of those differentiating factors when people are looking at open networking. What hardware do I want? Now what software do I want? What protocols do I want to support? That'll start narrowing that funnel down to what's the right fit for me, as opposed to the one size fits all approach. So RT Brick, I think these guys are pretty cool. Their first deployment was to do BNG. How many people are familiar with BNG? Broadband Network Gateway. So Broadband Network Gateway is basically clustering together multiple functions for subscribers, right? So if you think about subscriber bandwidth management and how do they get my address, what package do I get when I get onto the service provider network, BMG consolidates those resources. They can, you can get BMG on different the tier one router platforms that are out there. Well, they figured out a way to program Broadcom silicon to do it directly at wide speed going through the Broadcom chipsets, which is pretty cool. So their first deployment was Deutsche Telekom, and successful deployment. They've been running it for years. It has expanded out a little bit. CityNet, for example, was one of the more recent. And they've also added features and functionality. So they can do MPLS on the MPLS at the edge, where that's where the PE router is. They can do BGP at scale, depending on, again, the Broadcom chipsets that are deployed. But the BMG is where they're focused. They can also do carrier grade NAT, CGNAT. Familiarity with CGNAT? Yeah, people running IPv6 doing, yeah, all right. So they can also do that at line rate in the silicon, which is really cool. And so this one is more of your niche, I've got this problem to solve and I can do it for you very well play in the open networking space. And like I said, they've got active deployments that are out there, but they're a lot less well known because of that focus on that niche area. And if you go to their website, it's all Lego guys. It's kind of fun because of the bricks. Anyway, and then veering off a little bit. So NetElastic, considered open networking platform. So far, every operating system I've talked about is a commercial network operating system. This is not something you download and compile. This is something that they build, they sell you, they will support. It's just you have the flexibility of what you're loading and how you're loading it, out of which box. So this is another commercial solution. So NetElastic, what freaks people out about NetElastic when they first look at it is you take a server, say a Dell or a Supermicro or whatever server you want, you can run it in a virtualized environment if you'd like. You take that and you load their software on that and it programs, programs purpose-built NICs using a protocol DPDK so that you can actually do line rate services on NICs in servers, which is a totally different approach than all the other stuff I was just talking about. But the value of this is, because you can put it on Intel servers with a NIC in it, now you've got something that can be deployed easily at a data center that doesn't have a lot of space for the network here, but they've already got servers there. And now you can do those BMG functions, the Broadband Network Gateway. You can do routers, including virtualized routers in your VM infrastructure. And carry grade NAT. So they took a completely different approach to this and looking at how do I use commodity server hardware and still offer routing functions. So with them, they have a completely different, like I said, a completely different approach to the hardware, but you can still run BGP on this thing. You can pair it into your routers and your network and make it part of your network for your failover and how you're handling and managing your customer traffic, including with carrier grade NAT. They've been a decent player in this space, and we've got a lot of deployments that are out there. Again, 2024, some of these companies are really busy developing and they don't spend a lot of time updating their marketing slides, so this is the latest I got. At any rate, 100 gig interfaces, I've got deployments of this running 200 gig of traffic through a NIC on a server, which seems kind of crazy, but with the DPDK and the way that works, it's solid, it works great. So that's a different approach. And then we go to Sonic. So how many people familiar with Sonic? All right, so, what just happened? Where is my presentation? There we go, I hit something I didn't mean to. Okay, so for Sonic, Sonic is the software for open networking in the cloud. Sonic originally came out of Microsoft. And so, okay, so Sonic originally came out of Microsoft. And they released it out to the open source community to develop. So with Sonic, there are a lot of people that are working in this space. I mean, you can buy a lot of the tier one hardware vendors also have the ability to run Sonic on their boxes. Some are more open about that than others. Some of them are like, I can still kind of sell you the hardware. But there's a lot of people that are involved in this project. So the cool thing about Sonic is you can go out there and download it off of GitHub and compile it and run the network operating system on your switches. The downside is nobody made that software work efficiently on the switches, so you get to, or your IT team does. And so there's a little more of a lift. That has scared a lot of people away from Sonic, but All of the hyperscalers are running this in their data centers at scale. So this is a well-deployed platform, and we've got ways of getting around needing your own development team to run it. There are platforms out there that do orchestration. I listed a few here. I like to call them the click and drill platforms, where you can just click and drill and build your network. And so you don't have to have that detailed understanding of all of the protocols in the back end, but it helps you learn them. So I use examples of some of those tools that came, I deployed a lot of Cisco boxes, and they had this Cisco LAN manager. You could log in and build a config and then go back and see how it built the configs later, and you could learn that way. So you can use these platforms to build the network and then go into the box and say, oh, let's see how it was built. Now you can learn the commands that were used to build the network, which I love them for those. But there's multiple out there, and because Sonic is open source, all of these tool companies don't have to come from the place that's writing the software or building the hardware. Anybody can go out and grab it. And so now you've got more diversity in that ecosystem of people that are building tools for this, which is I think, awesome. So financial drivers. The real reason a lot of companies go start looking at open source or open networking is because of financial drivers. So I've got a use case. I kept it very generic. One of our customers had put out there, these are the platforms they use, that IP Infusion deployment. They have some UEFI space boxes, some EdgeCore boxes, service providers, so Broadcom DNX, a lot of Qumran chipsets, some Jerichos. And here's what they found, which I think is awesome. When they went from their traditional router platform to these, 1/6 of the power consumption when they did this deployment. And if you think about that in infrastructure for remote sites at service providers, that's a huge deal. Normally their power consumption is going up, not down. 5 times the interface density at 1/3 of the cost overall for the deployment. So while we don't lead with, hey, this thing runs, this can save you money, it certainly can. The technology is there to be more flexible, and because of that, we've got more players in the space, which makes it competitive space, right, for us to be able to deploy in the networks and also save some money on that. So that's pretty cool. And then how is it possible? One of the reasons that works really well, because you're looking at total cost of ownership. This isn't just like initial buy. One of the reasons for that is a lot of these platforms have perpetual licensing. You bought the license for the box, you've got it for as long as you've got the box. Now you can buy support that goes along with that, and they, you know, for support contracts, but you don't have to go back and license, hey, I want that 100 gig port. Okay, well, I got to get another license for that. And then pay for the support for the license for the 100 gig port. You don't have any of that in this ecosystem. You buy the hardware, you buy the software for it, and then you've got it for as long as you run it. If you want software updates, you pay for support. You can talk to me about that later, about how all that works, because I don't want to dig into the details because I'm still between you and lunch. If you ask ChatGPT about Sonic Fabric, this is what I got the first time. There are people that market this. This wasn't even generated by ChatGPT. This is just some links that they found. So you got to be more specific when you search for Sonic Fabric. And then I said, how does the Sonic Fabric look if you were to build it out in a data center? This is what ChatGPT built for the diagram and described it, which was actually pretty accurate. I mean, not the coolest network diagram, but you know, it's still pretty accurate. It's got the right terms in there, digging into the protocols. But if you grab a diagram of what a Sonic Fabric looks like, it is a spine leaf, close, however you want to call it. This is a traditional data center infrastructure. It looks just like what everybody else is building out there, and they're using the same protocols. So this isn't a new thing to learn. It's just simply an operating system to learn. It's the same technologies. All right, and then just to reiterate on where this plays, Telecom Infra Project has this project called Open Wi-Fi. You can actually buy access points and switches where you have a open community-based software and firmware for your switches and your Wi-Fi, which gives you multiple controller options. So now when you're buying your hardware, you can choose which controller you want to run, or in the case of EdgeCore, they also have their own version of it, they call it EC Cloud, that you can look at to bring it together. The reason I grabbed this picture is because if you look at that, they got TerraGraph gear in there, Wi-Fi, the switches, all that stuff. All of these platforms can have different firmware put on them, so you can run somebody else's controllers, which is a paradigm shift to everything that we've seen for managed services out in the networking space. It's awesome because if you decide you don't like how that they run the network or what their licensing looks like, you can go to another one and not have to replace or touch the hardware. We've done that, where we've done network upgrades for companies, changed their software and didn't touch any of their hardware, and gave them new network capabilities because that other management platform could do it for them. So that's pretty powerful in open networking. Get that.
So do we have any questions? Any questions? Yes, ma'am.
So for students who are mainly cybersecurity and computer science major, what skills would you say are essential or steps that need to be taken for careers that may bridge between open networking and AI?
Any questions?
Specific to security, as was alluded to, well, not alluded to, but covered with the DNS session earlier, all of the protocols that are running here, all of them have security implications, right? So one of the major protocols in the service provider networking, BGP, right? If you mess with somebody else's BGP table, you could reroute entire countries or take all of their traffic down. So there's a huge security implication to everything that's being built here. So if it was me, and I was getting into that, and you threw AI in there, which is putting my brain for a loop here. But if it was me digging into this, I would be looking at how the protocols are written. Like you were saying earlier, they have to be built on these standards, right? How they're written, where those loopholes are, and start researching how people have taken advantage of the trust that the original protocols that are still being used, that were written back in the 70s, the trust they have on those network operators and the people that are building the hardware. Look at where that's at. So in the AI space, I love building out a little, starting out with, hey, from the perspective of a network operator, if I was deploying this hardware with this software, what security vulnerabilities would I be concerned about? It's surprisingly detailed. And it can actually lead you towards what other people have done in that space to help protect it. Some of them are firewall rules because they don't have a fix for the protocol, which is kind of scary. So for me, I would look at, in open networking, Sonic gives you a very unique opportunity to actually see the source code of the routing and switching infrastructure. You don't get that from anybody else. But because Sonic was open source, and it was written by Microsoft, and it's run by all of the hyperscalers, there's a lot of attention being put into the security of Sonic, and you get to see the source code.
And that's the thing the mass media doesn't share well. The crook has to use the same protocols as the people trying to protect what the crook is trying to break into. So the key to it all is, drum roll, learn the protocol. And it's just a powerful thing. Any other questions? Any other questions? Yes, ma'am.
So, what challenges do you think arise when you're trying to integrate AI with your open networking?
Challenges to AI with open networking. Beyond actually getting GPUs, that's a challenge. So I think because it's an emerging space, it's changing really quickly, right? So you got the DriveNets deploying their software, we've got InfiniBand, we've got all these things. There's really no one standard way that people are going after this right now. And so part of it is understanding multiple approaches to getting it done, so that when you're working with customer A versus customer B or provider C, each of them is gonna have a different infrastructure. So the biggest challenge for me is drawing the parallels between the protocols and the way they were implemented between the different companies that are out there. That can be challenging, and until you've been in the space for a while, somebody can learn how I'm not picking on any specific vendors, but how, let's say, Cisco implemented certain protocol, certain features with the BGP, and how it's a little bit different if you're doing Juniper or Arista or whoever else, right? They can be interpreted and written differently. So you have to learn those little nuances, and that just takes time. And for me, the best way to do that is you hop into a lab and you just start beating on it. You start building it up, you start playing with it, you figure out how to break it. Or one of the things I like to do is have somebody else, you build it up, have somebody else go in and break it, and then you have to go back in and fix it. That's to me, that's a powerful way to do it, but that is my biggest challenge there, is the differences in the way people applied the intent when they built it.
Great question. Any other questions? Any other questions? All right, let's give Jason a round of applause.